Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us for today's broadcast of Cloud Chasers. I'm Leslie Poston, and we're coming at you live from Arrow Street Studios in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Just to give you a little bit of background information, this is a half-hour radio show. It's dedicated to dispelling the hype around the cloud. In the coming weeks, we'll be bringing a wide variety of guests from around the industry to bring some clarity to you about life in the cloud. We will be monitoring Twitter today under hashtag CloudChasers. In the room on Twitter, we have at RUV, at LESLIE, at J Boltmeyer, and at Tangy Slice if you would like to talk to us directly during the broadcast. And now let's get right into today's topic. Today we'll be discussing cloud adoption and the key factors that are holding enterprise back from fully embracing the cloud for business critical operations. Cloud computing offers the promise of agility, flexibility, and cost savings. But obstacles such as cost, security, culture, and lack of knowledge stand in the way of cloud adoption. We'll be taking a look at some of those obstacles today and different viewpoints on them. We welcome listener participation. Again, the hashtag is hashtag CloudChasers. Now let me introduce our guests. John Boltmeyer is Director of Engineering, Identity, and GRC at Novell. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. We're happy to have you also. We also have Reuven Cohen, who writes the Elastic Vapor Cloud blog and is the founder and CTO of Anomaly, which is a worldwide leader in cloud computing and is the creator of CloudCamp. Welcome, Reuven.
Thank you, Leslie. Looking forward to the discussion today.
Excellent. Today we're going to touch on four topics surrounding cloud life and cloud computing: culture, knowledge, security, and cost. We'll be basing these topics around some articles that have hit the internet recently. We're going to start off with a little bit of cloud culture. This was inspired by the article, Why the Back Office Avoids the Cloud, Hint It's Not Technical, found in Information Management. Reuven, I know that you had indicated some interest in tackling this topic. Why don't you start us off?
Sure. It's an interesting topic, the sort of back office, and there's a kind of love-hate relationship with cloud computing, especially from the different parts of these businesses. You know, from what I see, you've got these sort of two parts. You've got these business units that are going out to the cloud today and saying, hey, I can get something done. I can get it done quickly. And then you have these IT guys that are saying, you know, I don't really like the idea of what I used to be able to control now at the whim of some business unit in a remote environment. So I think this particular article really hits at the heart of the sort of differences between the point of view of getting things done quickly and getting things done securely.
Yeah, Reuven, when we were talking with James Staten at Forrester, for example, one of the things that they indicated when they go out and talk to people is they look at IT and they ask the IT guys, how much cloud do you have out there? And they'll say, I don't know, 1%, 2%, 3%. Then you go out and you talk to the businesses. They're all over the place. They've got 30, 40, 50%. So, they don't realize, or they may not be admitting, that they have as much adoption as they do. And I think part of it comes down to the culture of who's setting it up, right? The time to first results, the fact that you can go out with a credit card more easily than you can talk to your IT shop.
Yeah, exactly. The aspects of, you know, any guy with a credit card now can go and get a problem solved quickly and easily, I think really is important to look at. But on the flip side of that is how do you track all that? You know, a guy with a credit card can go and put his or the company's information in the cloud with there being very little oversight to how that information is sort of disseminated and controlled. So it's a double-edged sword in a sense that you really don't have that control that a lot of these larger organizations are used to. But you have the speed that a lot of the startups are assuming is there and allows the bigger companies to act like a startup or I guess a little bit of vice versa there.
I think you have to look at the workloads you're trying to deal with as well, kind of take a portfolio view. So if they reacted to everything that got put out there, they'd be paralyzed, right? But they need to take a look at their most critical systems that impact their financials or their some regulation that they're dealing with. So certainly by industry sector, it's gonna change. But this is just such a such a natural thing for people entering business right now, right? If you're using Facebook, if you're using Gmail, you know, cloud adoption from the SaaS side of it has been there for, you know, upwards of 10 years now. So it's a matter of degree of, what we're willing to put out there.
Most of our audience is very IT savvy, but for some of them I'm seeing hopping into the stream that are not, could one of you please explain the difference between the phrase in the cloud and cloud computing for us briefly?
Well, I can try to take a stab at it. You know, there is sort of these two big parts of the discussion, and the cloud, in a sense, is this kind of metaphor which has become, you know, just another way to describe the internet itself. And then there's cloud computing, which is kind of this term that's come up more recently in terms of how you get things done using internet-centric technologies. And I think the two are sometimes combined, but the two, in my opinion, are very much different. So, you know, in at the heart of this sort of shift that's happening, it is a shift towards you know, a network-based environment, one that may include things internally and may include components externally as well, but at the heart of it includes the internet. And I think that is the underlying principle for both the cloud and cloud computing.
I think one of the things that resonates for me when I talk with people is around the difference between, you know, trying to dispel the hype. What's the difference between advanced virtualization and the cloud? You know, what are we really talking about here? And, you know, one aspect could be that it's fully automated, that you've actually gone to that step and it's available through a self-service capability. So that kind of describes at a high level the cloud. And then there are more technical discussions that we could get into around, you know, we talk about infrastructure as a service or software as a service or platform as a service, and they're all different aspects of what you're trying to get done.
Yeah, it really does. And there's this problem as well, as cloud computing and the cloud in general is become this kind of catch-all phrase, and it's a way for you to sort of describe that we're new, we're different. You know, it's become a kind of marketing buzzword. And the problem with any kind of, you know, all-encompassing marketing term is it becomes very difficult for those actually trying to buy cloud-related services to figure out what is actually a cloud service, what is a cloud environment, and what problems does it solve, and what are some of the problems it may create for me. And there's this sort of trend towards cloud washing that makes it very difficult for consumers. So, you know, part of that is sort of trying to define what it means for your own business, looking at definitions, things like the NIST definition, for example, that does a great job of sort of outlining the core parts of a cloud computing environment and seeing how that can actually relate to your business. And I think that's probably a good first step as well.
I think that segues nicely into the topic of knowledge. We had called up an article, a survey from Mimecast that was done in February that pretty much stated that 70% of companies already using cloud computing solutions were planning on moving additional applications to the cloud. 62% of their respondents had considered cloud computing. People listed security concerns, which we'll cover a little later in the show, as the biggest leading reason why they were not going to adopt cloud computing. 32% said that existing infrastructure investments were the main reason for not moving to the cloud. And some said legacy and integration worries. So it looks like that segues nicely into what you two were just talking about. Can you tell us more about the knowledge gap?
Certainly. I think the thing about this, you know, stats in general is they can be played, you know, in a positive or negative light. So I've never really been a big fan of sort of putting them down, but they certainly are an interesting discussion point. So, you know, 70% of companies using cloud are already using cloud computing. And again, it is such a broad term. That means that, you know, a cloud environment could be they have a Gmail account. You know, it could be as simple as that. So it's certainly an interesting shift that it's outlining. I also agree. In the people I'm talking to, in terms of security in particular, it's always the first thing that's raised. You know, I'm now putting all this information into someone else's hands, and how do I, you know, provide the sort of, you know, insights, the trust, the verification of that trust in a way that can be, you know, more than just a blanket, you know, I trust a company because of their brand or some other, you know, type of less tangible aspect.
I think you've zeroed in on a lot of it there. We see this balance between security and agility, right? The ability to get that self-service where you've taken what used to be a 12-week operation, right? An application used to be tied to ordering a server and getting it racked and stacked and put up, and and the app was tied with that. Now with this advanced virtualization, not only of the compute, but releasing the network from the infrastructure and releasing the storage, now you have all this fluidity, and you can get to that, you know, instant enablement of that application. But it takes a lot of new ways of working at the problem.
Yeah, and one of the things you mentioned a couple times is virtualization, and that at CloudCamp in particular, it's one of those topics that keeps coming up. Is virtualization a key requirement of the cloud? And in a sense, it isn't, but it certainly makes it easier to manage. And I think you hit right at the heart of it when you say sort of automation. A lot of what, you know, the infrastructure as a service players in particular are trying to do is remove the human aspect and automate the underlying components and focus on what's most important, the application itself. And I think automation is probably a key point to that. And whether that includes a virtual environment or not, you know, I think the automation is particularly important.
Yeah, that's a conversation we've had internally at Novell all the time around, you know, SaaS, software as a service, it doesn't require virtualization per se, right? And the problems that you have with an internet scale delivery are somewhat different than an infrastructure as a service play. The elastic nature of the workload, the ability to handle the spikes in traffic. So it's depending on you know what you're going to service, the size of the audience. It's a big deal. And in the virtualization or infrastructure as a service play, we're seeing a lot of success with private clouds because it's this containerization. If you think back to like the storage containers on ships that allowed you to go from a truck intermodal rail to a ship, and all the pieces fit like Lego blocks because they're all the same size. I think that's where we are with virtualization at this moment, right? We have these units of computing that we can now move around, and how to leverage that and how to tag them with the right security attributes and the right identities and keep track of them, as you mentioned earlier, is the key aspect.
Yeah, and that 32% of respondents saying that their existing infrastructure investments is one of the main reasons they weren't moving the clouds also points to the sort of greater opportunities for things like a private cloud implementation or possibly a sort of hybrid solution that may contain, you know, bits and pieces of the infrastructure you've already spent, you know, big bucks on typically, with the ability for the elasticity and the scale you get from using remote cloud computing providers. And I think this is particularly important, especially in sort of the infrastructure type cloud deployments.
Just a reminder for those just tuning in, you're listening to Cloud Chasers Live at the Arrow Street Studios. We're operating under hashtag Cloud Chasers on Twitter if you're following along online. And now that we're starting to veer off into the private cloud and cost issues, just to touch on the article that inspired that, it said, "Don't look down, the path to cloud computing is still missing a few steps," from Federal Computer Week. Security in the cloud is a really touchy topic for a lot of companies thinking of getting into cloud computing. Can you guys touch on that for a moment?
Sure, it's something that that we deal with all the time from a private or hybrid cloud point of view. So we're working a lot with hosters these days, who in a hybrid cloud, you want to leverage that model, that on-demand model, the self-service and the automation aspects, but it may not be with your own on-premises equipment. It may be that you have a trust relationship with a value-added provider who's been entering the market from the hosting side of it. So they're in actually an interesting situation. To everybody, I think, is striving to bring an app store experience. You know, they've been seeing the consumer-led innovation with, you know, the Apple Store and now how that's being cloned in the mobile environment. They want to get to that App Store experience and that order on demand. And it's they do have an interesting opportunity to provide a higher level of security hosted in the cloud, if you will.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on this as well. I think that the bigger problem that faces cloud computing is that aspect of transparency, and more specifically, the aspects of proving that transparency and proving the trust. So again, a lot of the cloud environments right now, when you ask, you know, what's powering the cloud, what's underneath the cloud, how have you built your infrastructure, the response is, well, we don't divulge that information, you know, just trust us, we know what we're doing. And on one hand, it's true. I would say a Google or a Microsoft or one of those large technology vendors probably does have a lot more experience than some random person in a basement. But others do have a sort of long existing history of running successful infrastructures and require a better answer than just trust me. our infrastructure is secure. And right now there is a problem in proving that that type of infrastructure is secure. And again, I think it points to the aspects of, you know, a verifiable trust.
And it just shows you that the mechanisms in place to deal with that aren't really caught up with the technology. For example, in the accountant's response to this is literally something like a SAS 70 audit. So if you're going to outsource your business or part of your business to a hoster, they're going to want to comply with an SAS 70 certificate that describes some of this transparency. But there's a lot of wiggle room there as well. So, you know, we think getting the audit trail coming back from that, making that transparent, making it on demand will help you realize some of those compliance issues. But think about what's going on with the technology. If you have storage arrays or virtual LANs or compute grids, vCenter, vSphere, or something of that nature, or XEN or open source, whatever the implementation is, how are you going to bring an auditor in with a clipboard and point to your blinky lights? I want to see where my data is in that one spindle, right? How does that work?
There are a number of projects that are sort of, you know, been created lately that are attempting to solve those sorts of issues. One in particular is a project called Cloud Audit, which is attempting to create a kind of standardized approach to sort of automated audit assertion, assessment, and assurance through a sort of open source API. The project's actually at cloudaudit.org, and it's a working group focused on, you know, solving some of these issues. So I think it points to that people are starting to realize that this is a problem, and there's a sort of itch that needs to be scratched, and that's what's sort of great about the sort of world of open source and the world that we live in today. People kind of congregate together and try to solve these problems.
You know, we see some of the standards out there, you know, SSL, people are pretty comfortable with passing their credit cards back and forth, but to this transparency thing, how do we get the data flowing back to know what's happening in that infrastructure in the cloud? How do I know what's actually happened out there? And then some of these standards that are there, some of the more advanced things, we use security assertion markup language, for example, SAML. Mm-hmm. But we need to find ways to automate setting that up. That's part of the standards that don't, some of the details in making this apply in practice that aren't quite worked out yet.
You know, there's also other areas that I think I'm hearing that people are worried about, and one in particular is the hypervisor itself. You know, the issue that's facing hypervisor-based or virtualization-based deployments is one that the hypervisor makes the environment look any way you want. So it's very difficult from the point of view of a virtual machine to see the outside world. So the hypervisor, in a sense, paints the picture of the infrastructure any way it determines is optimal to the VM. So if, for example, the hypervisor was exploited, you'd probably never know, and that's another kind of major stumbling block for a lot of people looking to deploy in a remote virtualized environment.
One of the flip sides to that is the opportunities that affords, right? If you look at a VMSafe API, for example, in the VMware world, you have this opportunity to effectively tunnel underneath, you know, the virtualized infrastructure and do things like a virus scan at arm's length, or apply policy or roles or rules. It's a very exciting time to figure out how to do it better.
Assuming that you can get around the security and fear issues to adoption, how does cost factor into all of this?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when you go and you buy a latte at Starbucks or something, the $5 or $8 you're going to spend doesn't seem like that much to begin with, right? And that's what it's attracting these folks to SA software as a service, right? The ability to just put out that credit card and get what appears to be cheap cost. But if you add some of these things up for sustained run rates, it's much cheaper to have your own equipment or to get a reservation for the usage.
I sometimes use the analogy of a rental car. You know, when I travel to a city and I'm there for a couple of days, I'm certainly not going to buy a car. I'm going to rent the car, you know, because it's more cost effective. Although if I was to live in that city and I rented that car all the time, it would be significantly more expensive. So I think, coming at it from the point of view of ROI in general, it really does depend on the application and what you're trying to do. You know, so the sort of steady state type of applications where you don't have those sort of the spikes in the application and its usage, it certainly makes sense to have your own infrastructure and have your own servers. But in reality, a lot of applications aren't steady state. They do have you know, these spikes that happen on an hourly or daily basis, and those spikes are really difficult to determine ahead of time. I actually had a cloud camp the other day here in Toronto. John Willis, a sort of prominent cloud visionary of sorts, described it as the Stagosaurus effect, where you have this kind of long tail, but in that long tail of the application, you have these sort of spikes, you know, the Stagosaurus tail, what he was describing. And I think that sort of is a perfect analogy.
You also have to take a portfolio view of what you're trying to get done, right? And tag the workload. So are you a developer testing a sandbox application that you might want to run on public infrastructure, or is this running your financials? I mean, something like an SAP installation might be 30 virtual machines. So it depends on the size and complexity and how important it is to your business. And those costs, you want to arbitrage and find the cheapest way to get it done, the fastest way. We actually have a hoster has this in production, where the business owners, you know, the people that they're selling the services to, are using self-service interfaces to choose an SLA that has the dollar signs right in front of them. So making that cost transparent, making that ability to say, well, maybe I don't need, you know, as much high availability, or maybe I don't need as much RAM, or no, this is the most important thing, and I'm gonna take that guarantee of IO performance, for example.
There's also pretty good examples within the social realm of these companies like Farmville and so forth that have grown in you know, matter of months from no users to hundreds of millions of users. And it sort of points at this trend that these little guys can now, you know, compete with the Googles and Microsofts of the world, and the reason they can do this sort of, you know, 0 to 100 million user growth is because of cloud computing. And there's also this sort of discussion that always comes up, you know, is the cloud ready for, you know, mission critical apps? I would argue that, you know, if you are Farmville and your app is, you know, growing at some staggering amount, that is a mission critical app. It's running in the cloud. I think the problem that a lot of these larger established companies are facing is the fact that this is new, and like anything new, it's sometimes scary to kind of jump into something that you may not have a familiarity with, I guess.
As long as I have a way to turn off those Farmville updates, I'll be in good shape.
I was just going to say, I don't think anyone's ever described Farmville as mission critical before.
Well, to them, it probably is.
But what you're getting at is exactly this elastic compute knowledge, you know, compute capability, and the fact that something like a Google platform as a service, you embrace these constraints. It's a new model of writing code, right? You embrace a lot of constraints about the application, but in that trade-off, you give and hand off to Google the ability to spike and deal with that traffic and grow as needed. What are you hearing at the cloud camps about you know, the vendors trying to, or the independents who can use a Mac and a Starbucks to create, you know, something that scales that large in an afternoon, literally? What are you hearing about, you know, worries about lock-in or, you know, platform as a service?
Well, it's. I think Google is the perfect example. Everybody kind of wants to be Google in terms of their infrastructure and you know, basically their success. And I think what's made Google particularly successful in the point of view of developers, and if you've ever talked to a Google developer, someone that works for Google, they are not aware of the Google infrastructure. They're not aware of the scale that Google operates at. What Google's done a particularly good job of doing is hiding the complexities of a very large, globally dispersed infrastructure. So what they've done is in a sense, giving you a very, you know, giving you a box basically to program within. You know, as long as you work within the confines of this sort of programming paradigm, it'll just work. And I think that sort of hiding the complexity of the underlying infrastructure has been a key to their success. And if you look at others in the space, you know, especially in the infrastructure as a service space, the opportunity is not to recreate the infrastructure from the point of view of a virtual one, but to create an infrastructure that removes all complexity and says you can now focus on what matters most: building and deploying your applications. And whether that's using A, B, or C operating system or A, B, C programming system is completely secondary to solving my particular problem points.
So speaking of simplifying, how do you think upcoming tools like the iPad are going to change cloud computing for the end user?
Well, I think the iPad certainly, and the iPhone would definitely be examples of this kind of hybrid model that says, I think Microsoft said it first, where you have this sort of software plus services. It's not that your application is going to be 100% in the cloud or 100% on a mobile device or a desktop. At the end of the day, applications have become sort of, you know, internet connected, whether it's an update or data feed or what have you. There's always going to be a network-centric piece to any application basically that's being developed at this point. And the question is, how do you deal with that? Because you used to have to manage all those desktops, you know. So I'd send a CD and I would install it, and the capacity would be the problem of the CPU itself on those millions of desktops. Now, suddenly, software providers are forced to be not only the software provider, but the capacity provider. So it's an interesting shift that's occurring within the realm of software. And I think iPhone is a pretty good example, or the iPad.
I think Tim O'Reilly says software above the level of a single device, right? That's exactly where you're headed. The fact that stuff that you do on your iPad or your iPhone, you pick up seamlessly with where you were at on your desktop, and you're not really tied to that previous experience of computing in one place.
So at the end of the show, we like to do a little segment called Clouding Around, which is a humorous look at some things on the internet. And I think that the iPad segues nicely into Google's April Fool's joke last week about being able to, you know, store anything in Google Docs, your car keys, your cat. If you could put anything into the cloud, literally, what would you put there?
you're talking to a person that spends his days thinking about cloud. So that's interesting. John, you want to?
I don't know. I mean, in terms of getting part of my life simplified and put it in the cloud, I like to figure out if there's an app for getting my dogs walked in the morning, especially when it's cold out. Beautiful weather we're having today, though. It's okay.
I think half the internet would probably say things like mother-in-law, tax accountant, you know. All right, well, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Cloud Chasers, and thank you to Reuven Cohen, and I'm going to butcher your last name, John, for being on here. And I just wanted to tell you to tune in next week when our topic is going to be cloud interoperability. I also want to encourage you to continue the discussion by joining our Cloud Chasers group on LinkedIn. You can also follow the hashtag after the fact on Twitter. Again, that's hashtag Cloud Chasers. We will be putting all of the links to all of the articles discussed in today's show on the LinkedIn group and possibly on the webpage as well. If you have any comments or questions, please get with all of us on Twitter. And we look forward to seeing you next week.